This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Yes, you're on Joy 94.9. It's Lefty Pinkos with Brian and Emma. We're still hearing Cass' name on the intro.
We are, and we're closer to, I guess, changing that. The wonderful Christian Vega, who used to host the Vixen Hour here on Joy 94.9, was in town on the weekend, and I wanted to catch up with him and eat duck, as we are prone to doing when we catch up. We couldn't do that because I was with you, Emma, actually, at the Spiegel tent.
Yes.
But Christian was here. He gave us a file to manipulate. So you're going to be on that show intro any day now, Emma.
I'm very excited. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. So you should be, because it's Lefty Pinko's Hour and it's presented by Brian and Emma. And this week we're actually going to mark Mental Health Week, aren't we?
We are. It's Mental Health Week at the moment. Started on Sunday, running through to Saturday. It's a very important issue. So we're covering a couple of topics tonight. We've got a guest with us in the studio. We're going to be talking about mental health issues for the transgender and gender diverse community and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as well.
And yeah, I guess we're joined in the studio by Claire. And one of the things we like to ask our guests, Claire, is introduce yourself. Tell us a bit about who you are, where you're from, what you know.
Thank you, Brian. That's very generous. I'm a clinical psychologist. I suppose that's why I'm appearing in this context. I'm also a queer, and I work in the queer community over in Paran at a medical centre over there, which I shall remain nameless. Mm-hmm. And I work in mental health as a calling, I suppose, as well as being someone who's a journalist, and various other incarnations have passed in distant times. But at the moment, I'm still a clinical psychologist and have been for 25 years. And I'd be really stoked to be able to make some, you know, informed comments if I can with you and help you decipher this area of mental health tonight.
And Claire, you and I have actually met because we're both doing the Taste of Radio course here at Joy at the moment. How are you finding that?
Oh, it's challenging, isn't it? That Leanie's a hard taskmaster.
She is.
She's fabulous, though. She's a wonderful teacher and educator.
Font of knowledge. She's amazing. Yeah. No, I'm really enjoying it, actually. What about you?
Yeah, I'm loving it as well. Mm-hmm. I'm enjoying just being on the radio with the Pinkos too.
And I'm enjoying having you both in here to kind of talk about what will be a fairly, I mean, it's actually a very serious issue. And and so I guess in this week, before we got on air, Claire and I were going, you know, we like to just jump in the deep end. And this week we're actually going to, like as Emma said, we're going to focus on transgender and gender diverse peoples and their experience of, I guess, anxiety, depression and mental health, and also look at, I guess, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. What we've done for tonight is we've assembled, I guess, some stories or some testimonies or some experiences from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, and also from a transgendered woman called Alternity, who we had a bit of a chat to over the weekend. So we'll air some, I guess, stories around mental health and their experience, and just, yeah, kind of, I guess, bring Claire in to discuss, you know, or contextualise what it is, I guess, in terms of mental health, depression, anxiety, and I guess those experiences felt by the peoples in our community. I guess just before we sort of kick off, though, we'd like to just, I guess, put a bit of a disclaimer out there, and I guess we will, we'd like to warn listeners that we will be discussing and hearing stories about depression, anxiety and suicide, and if the content of tonight's show leaves you feeling distressed or disturbed, please talk to our friends at the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Switchboard. They can be contacted via 03 9663 2949, and if you call in from regional Victoria or Tasmania, they've got a 1-800 number, which makes things cheaper for you, and that is 1-800-184-527. And I guess in researching tonight too, we also happened across Beyond Blue, who have, I guess, developed a range of wonderful resources for, I guess, a lot of different communities within Australian society, be it men, be it women, be it young people. They deal with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. They also deal with the Rainbow community. So, Beyond Blue are actually out there as a fantastic font of resources, and they've got stuff online, but they've also got a switchboard or a phone service, rather, that's 24/7. And again, if you feel distressed about any of the content we raised tonight, we do encourage you to ring Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636. And I guess, yeah, in terms of tonight, Claire, like, can you maybe just describe for our listeners what is mental health? And
yeah, maybe a day in the life of a clinical psychologist working in a queer community medical centre or something like that.
Yeah,
mental health is a term, isn't it? And so is mental illness. And what do they actually mean? I mean, they're quite laden with lots of different meanings depending on, you know, who's looking at what angle's looking at it, I suppose. But what is being mentally healthy? I guess it's being able to think clearly, to be able to feel stably, to be able to, you know, predict ahead a little bit what's going on in your life, you know, that kind of thing. And when you experience, you know, what's commonly called a mental illness, which is a kind of a medicalized term in some ways, isn't it? But when you experience something like that, it's a feeling of real loss of control, like loss of control of everything in your life, or loss of control of your emotions, loss of control of your thoughts. And that's the fundamental thing. A lot of people go through this major loss and grief around it, and also feelings of failure. And yeah, so mental health, on the other hand, is probably avoiding that happening and staying well and, you know, remaining. I like to think of Mental Health Week as celebrating that, you know, trying to remain mentally healthy in a world which is increasingly stressful. Yeah.
Do you think the stigma around, because I mean, it's been long known, I suppose, that there's a stigma around mental health issues. Do you think that that is getting better over time? Do you think it's better understood by people?
Yeah, look, it's still there. I still hear it spoken about quite a lot, you know, in hospitals or, you know, from different patient or client groups. It's definitely still there, but I think there is slightly more education about, you know, it could happen to anyone in some ways. Mental health is, you know, pretty high statistics, you know, 1 in 3 for anxiety, 1 in 5 for depression. You know, there's a lot of it in every community, including our own GLBTIQ communities. And, you know, there are higher rates in areas where contextual stress is higher. So if you're going through a lot more stress in your everyday life, there are much higher rates of mental health decline, which shows that there's a lot of environmental aspect to it, as well as, you know, it's not just the person having some kind of weakness. It's also an interaction with the environment, and some communities are easier to live in than others, you know. So those are important things to think about too with mental health, I think.
In researching tonight, we've looked at, I guess, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and also transgender and gender diverse peoples. And I guess one of the things I found frustrating as an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander person was trying to find statistics around, I guess, the prevalence of mental health and mental illness, or mental illness, depression, anxiety, and even sort of suicide rates within Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. And it was quite hard in that sense of trying to find statistics, but I guess there's some that point to suicide and its prevalence. And in 2010, within Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, suicide accounted for 4.2 of registered deaths, and this was in New South Wales, Queensland, Western Australia, South Australia and NT combined. And after adjusting for different age profiles of the two populations, the suicide rate of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people was 2.6 times higher than the rate for the non-Indigenous population. One of the things that I discovered in the research is that trauma was something that kind of led people to, mental distress or anxiety and subsequently suicide. And one of the terms that came up in looking at trauma was the term stressor. Could you define what a stressor is or what it means?
Yeah, look, it's a complex term in some ways. We're talking about things that trigger another person in their environment to react in a particular way that's maybe a bit foreign to us, but, you know, makes a lot of sense to them based on what they might have experienced in unusual experiences growing up, or, you know, at a significant time in their life during a relationship where they're really attached to someone. A whole range of things can set you off. Things like, you know, going to a foreign country and killing people can set you off, obviously, too. Trauma is experiencing something outside of the ordinary that you can't make any sense of and you can't integrate into your existing framework. So a stressor is something that kind of reminds you of that, or that re-triggers some associative aspect of that, if you can get what I mean? Like, it's something that associates with it. It brings up the trauma again. So you can get re-traumatized by going through a very similar experience to something that happened earlier, or you can just have a new trauma, or you can be traumatized by being around other people who've experienced trauma. All these things hold inherent stressors or triggers in them for different people.
Mm-hmm. We've got some statistics on the transgender and gender diverse community as well that I'll just briefly sort of touch on. So La Trobe University did a study recently involving 190 transgender and gender diverse people. 66% of those people surveyed had sought health support for mental illness in the past year. 38% had suicidal thoughts. 33% felt that they weren't supported by their families and suffered from stress and depression. And 45% were diagnosed with anxiety and depression versus around about 25% for the mainstream community. So one of the interesting things out of that as well is that of those people surveyed, 66% had participated in some form of activism as a protective factor as well, which is quite a nice thought that that's something that is sort of helping people, I suppose.
Yeah, it kind of lends itself nicely to, I guess, those notions of self-determination or taking control of your destiny in your life. And yeah, it was a really nice statistic to be added as part of that survey.
I wonder what it constitutes. Is it having a yell, or is it, you know, sort of writing to authorities? Or probably all sorts of different things for different people.
Yeah, I think I remember reading actually somebody speaking about that particular survey on Joy of all radio stations, and they actually spoke about it wasn't just, this notion of slacktivism where someone just liked something on Facebook and, you know, and that was their kind of protective measure that they took in order to, you know, be involved with activism around the community. But it was actually kind of attending rallies, writing letters to MPs. I think letters was one of those things that trans and gender diverse people involved with that survey said that they did in order to, I guess, make change and again, serve a sense of self-determination when it came to their identity and their rights with that identity. But you're listening to Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9. It's Emma and Brian, and we're chatting to Claire. It's Mental Health Week. We'll be back with more chats.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Yes, and you're with Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9. It's Emma and Brian, and we're here with Claire talking about mental health for Mental Health Week, which runs from Sunday the 5th of October through to Saturday the 11th of October. And just, I guess, before, if you've just tuned in, actually, we're just chatting about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander populations and transgender and gender diverse populations. But one of the things that I found in researching for tonight was that in the, I guess, reports that dealt with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander mental health, there was always this real push for resilience, or there was this, like, you know, yes, it's there's an aspect of doom and gloom, but there's also this, I guess, aspect of resilience. And I've even seen it echoed in Beyond Blue's, resourcing around Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander depression and anxiety. And they have termed it as being, there's risk factors, but then there's also protective factors. And, yeah, do you want to, I guess, yeah, talk about that difference and why that dichotomy exists.
Yeah. So what puts you at risk of developing mental health symptoms versus what may protect you from developing them? So mental health symptoms, what are they? Well, probably common high prevalence mental health disorders are things like depression or anxiety. But there are many other mental health conditions, obviously, and there's whole things you can use to diagnose people with them, which we can use if we want. But basically, yeah, it's dealing with communities which have high prevalence or, you know, high risk factors for particular things, setting them off. Yeah,
I guess some of those within Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities are like widespread grief and loss, and that kind of notion of going to many funerals, the impacts of the stolen generations and the removal of children. And I guess statistically there's it sits at around 1 in 3 and 1 in 10 Aboriginal people have been removed from their families historically.
That illustrates intergenerational trauma on a massive scale, you know, and when you think about that carrying down lines in families, and probably not just in Indigenous communities, obviously, but in other families which have had trauma, but particularly in Indigenous communities, because there's been a rebound effect there, hasn't there, in, concentrations of trauma that have gone on for generations. Yeah.
Another thing is like that, I guess, another risk factor that came out in the research was discrimination based on race or culture, economic and social disadvantage, physical health problems, incarceration also featured as, I guess, one of those risk factors that led to bad mental health outcomes, violence and substance misuse. So, But I guess in terms of protective factors, it was really quite encouraging to sort of see things like, I guess they kind of, you know, in terms of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, combating mental illness was they looked at things like social connectedness and a sense of belonging, a connection to land, culture and spirituality and ancestry, living on or near traditional lands, self-determination like we mentioned earlier with the gender diverse community and transgender community. I guess that kind of notion of activism and self-determination was something that again fueled a protective factor within Indigenous mental health.
Yeah, part of that might be identification too, like a really strong feeling of being identified with something and belonging to something is really associated with good mental health in a lot of statistical research that's been done.
I think a lot of those things that Brian's just listed as well would apply. I mean, that report was about Indigenous people, but a lot of those things would apply across transgender and gender diverse communities as well, people who are more marginalised but who also have a strong sense of community as well.
Agreed, yeah.
I guess, but just in terms of, let's go back to definitions and talk, what is depression? When we say depression, what is it?
When we're describing any mental health condition, we're describing a set of symptoms that are observable objectively on the outside and also described by the subject, you know? So you're actually looking at both those things in making a decision about whether a person is meeting particular criteria for that. So you have to base that on history, on the symptoms they're presenting with and describing. A bit like pain, isn't it? If you're describing pain, what is pain? You know, you've got to actually get some sort of subjective experience of that. And so depression exists in people who experience things like really low energy. Depression is defined as low energy or really negative thought processes that just almost, you know, won't go away. They're ruminative, as we call them. So they just continue to go round and round in people's minds and they can't switch them off. It's a really common one. Not always racing, just present, constantly present when you wake up, when you go to sleep. So the same sort of negative thinking patterns, really entrenched. And just, you know, feelings of hopelessness are a really common thing too. Like, I can't go on. In fact, you're not sure whether you're feeling it or thinking it towards the end of it. You're just feeling a sense of, I just want to, well, in many cases, you know, I don't want to be here anymore. But, you know, in the majority of cases, it's just I don't want to get up. I don't want to function. I don't want to be part of things, you know. It's withdrawing and feeling like you're pulling back from things and you really don't have any reason to participate. Very sad feelings often and crying, but not always. Sometimes in many communities it's more common to see anger or, you know, particularly in men, you often see maybe it's a hormonal interplay or something, I don't know, but you often can see anger a lot more in male populations as a sign of depression. Not always, but...
Hmm. And the people that you see, are they people who sort of come to realise themselves that they've got issues and need to seek help, or does there tend to be some kind of specific traumatic event that might send them to get help?
It's a combination of all of those things. Sometimes things are picked up by a doctor and they aren't picked up by the person first. Perhaps irrational thinking or, you know, things like dementia can be picked up by a doctor and not understood by the person experiencing them. Or there can be other, you know, family members who've drawn attention to it, friends. A lot of the time it's self-referral too. Yeah, so it can be all of those sources, yeah.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Nice little pick-me-up there from Björk, all the way from Iceland. That was Big Time Sensuality. And just a little bit of a word on the music for tonight. We're discussing, I guess, depression and anxiety among Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and within the transgender and gender-diverse community. And so we thought, let's balance all this heavy, heavy chit-chat with some light, fun, happy house music. And we'll talk about house music, I guess, before we close the show, because there's a very special event here in Melbourne that we want to give a nice plug for. But yeah, you're with Lefty Pinkos.
I think you've chosen very good music for tonight, Brian.
Oh, thank you.
But we are talking about Mental Health Week this week. So I think just to hear from you again, Claire, you've just talked to us about depression. How would we, if we have, you know, a friend or somebody who we think is experiencing depression, how could we go about helping someone who we think needed it?
Well, the first thing is you can't force anyone to get help or to go to help if they don't really want to. And look, there are mixed feelings about seeking help out there too. Some people see it as something really quite, you know, dangerous, or it depends on, you know, what their own experiences of that sort of help have been in the past, doesn't it? But if you're really wanting to just get into, you know, to see a psychologist or someone, you know, fairly quickly within a number of weeks, best way is to go to your doctor and talk about the issue. Hopefully you've got a doctor you can talk to. If you don't, if you've got, you know, an issue with, you know, feeling compromised, or it's a family doctor or something, there are quite a few gay and lesbian GP services you can access around town in the north and in the south. And I won't mention them, but I'm sure people know where I'm referring to. And
Google's out there.
Yeah, Google's out there. And it's important to have a medical checkup probably a lot of the time too, to just, you know, make sure that you don't have anything like a thyroid problem influencing your health, or, you know, something else. And I think the same thing applies, you know, if you're having mental health problems, sometimes the psychologist might ask you to go and see a psychiatrist to have a medication checked, or a lot of the time not, you know. So usually you'll go straight from a GP to a psychologist, and then we'll call in other help if we need it, or get more of a team together for people if it's more serious. If it's a crisis, you're more likely, you know, in a meltdown situation. At that point, it's really imperative that you get to a hospital or to a crisis centre of some sort, like a triage in a hospital or an emergency area, to, you know, to really get checked out rapidly. Things like psychosis can come on really quickly, particularly in people in their early 20s, which is the last stage of your brain growing. And that's when emotional and sort of frontal lobe, which is your thought reasoning part of your brain, stuff can show up first. So that's when a lot of early diagnoses happen. So if you have any, if you're in that age group and you have any of those kinds of things go down, maybe there's been drugs or alcohol or something involved, really good idea to go to an emergency centre, who will refer you back to a GP afterwards usually anyway, if they're doing their job properly. And look, if you're going in with a crisis, you'll usually have some sort of care provided to you there. There's a lot of other community resources too, and, you know, Beyond Blue actually has a lot of that on their website. But if you're interested in, particularly in Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander or gay and lesbian, transgender, queer resources, I think, you know, if you just type that in with mental health, you'll usually get something in your local area that can provide you with resources for crises and for ongoing GP support.
And if you get concerned, I suppose, for me, you just sort of touched on, if you notice those things about yourself, if you get into a state of crisis, What if you notice that happening to somebody else? Are there steps that you suggest that someone could take for that situation?
If it's a friend, I think, yeah, you have to, if you're noticing something unusual, it's, if they're in a receptive place, it's hard to judge sometimes, but if they seem receptive, you know, talking to them about the things you're noticing that aren't checking out, and if they're aggressive or resistant, you know, that can be difficult because you don't really always want to, you know, haul someone into a hospital if they're not wanting to go. The best thing is to try to convince them to go to a doctor's appointment if you can, to just, you know, with usually a gay and lesbian doctor service, GLBTQIQ, or, you know, in the case of Indigenous issues, I'm sure there's quite a few health services that could assist with knowledge of that, those particular communities too. Brian, you'd know of a few of those around town, wouldn't you?
I guess, yeah. I mean, within the Indigenous health sector, and even just in researching tonight, what I found was that there's a real, I guess, emphasis on like social and emotional well-being. So there was like a holistic approach to health. So It wasn't just say, I've got a broken leg, therefore I'm going to go and get a cast, but they actually kind of view it in a sense of, I guess, that the person as a whole entity, and mental health and issues around mental health are coming to that kind of, that world view or that holistic view.
Yeah, I'd have to say that's probably common among, you know, I know it's certainly in the psychological community, most of us would see a person as a complete whole, holistic entity. So Looking at the health and well-being of the person, as well as social and, you know, narrative factors around the person, the context around the person, and their history too, all of that combined.
Yeah,
so that's important, I think, yeah.
Yeah, in places like VARS, I guess, they are literally like a one-stop shop for things, you know, be it they've got, you know, counselling and support services around for families and whatnot, but they kind of, you know, it's GP practice, there's also chiropractic practice, they've got a pharmacy and whatnot, so it is like literally a one-stop shop is what I'm trying to say here. Great. It kind of, yeah, I guess, responds to, yeah, I guess people's needs in that holistic sense.
There's also inlets through things like the Victorian AIDS Council, I suppose, different community entities that have counselling services that can then get you in touch with psychological services or medical services if you need them too. Yeah.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You're with Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9 and we're chatting in the background. We're talking mental health this week for Mental Health Week. It's Brian and Emma here and we've got Claire who joins us in the studio. And we've got another story that we'd like to air before we take off this evening. And this is actually a story that we recorded over the weekend and it's from a really generous, wonderful transgendered woman called Eternity who wanted to offer us a story about her experience of mental health and I guess transitioning and the issues that came up. This is what she had to say.
My current position is I'm a post-transsexual lady. I am no longer transsexual, but I am still transgender. I've had my birth certificate changed, but it was a long journey to go from that till now, going through the mental health system, which has been, I'd say, fairly disastrous. Things I've seen in the mental health system have been pretty shocking. From my perspective, the new Mental Health Act is no improvement on the previous one, and it's basically a catastrophic failure. I did have hopes that the Mental Health Complaints Commission may address some of the human rights abuses that I've seen and experienced during my transition, but that doesn't seem to be the case. The book that psychiatrists operate from at that time identified my condition as, I think it was gender identity disorder, not otherwise specified. But now they've decided that your gender identity is not mental illness, but the dysphoria that comes from it is an illness. And also in the new act, that's reflected in that they say that your gender identity cannot be classed as mental illness. However, there is this presumption that because you present saying, I need this surgery, and in my case, I had no confusion or confliction of whether I wanted surgery or not. I went to my doctor and said, if I don't get surgery, I'm going to kill myself, and that's just a fact. And after a while, I maintained that position and ended up in a psych ward, and I was in the psych wards for probably a year all up together, and they tried to use electric shock. They called it treatment, but it was basically torture to try and change my gender identity. Of course, that didn't work. And eventually, because I persisted with the thing, it's either surgery or suicide. That was the two options. Eventually, they did give in and gave their so-called permission for me to do what was my right in the first place. And I had surgery, and now, as far as that side of things goes, my life's fantastic. I ceased all contact with the psychiatrists that had been making me justify my position, had my surgery, and that was kind of the end of that. But in any case, at that time, which was in 2012, and it may have changed, things happened in the trans world very quickly. You know, I've sort of been out of touch with the trans world for maybe like 6 to 12 months, and from what I know, things have changed very, very dramatically for what is happening in that world now. But they have two criteria. One was eligibility, and the other was readiness. In regards to eligibility, they basically decide whether or not you're genuinely seeking surgery, which I suppose from their perspective or their justification for this is that they want to make sure that they don't get sued later on in that you had some other, what they call comorbidity, I think. They want to make sure that you're not changing, you're not getting this surgery because, like, aliens told you to or something. I have never known anyone at all that that has been in that situation. I've never known not even one person where they've sort of made it up, or it's just not something you do. You come to a point in your life where you just decide, you realise that you can't live the way, you know, in the body you're created. But, and the other part of the test is what they call a readiness test, which means that you're functional, you've got a job, or you're doing volunteer work, or you're studying or something like that. And all of this, having the eligibility test, basically you have to prove that you're so dysfunctional or debilitated because of you need to transition, that you know you need surgery and you can't function. But then you have to also prove that you're functional as well. So you end up in a, if you prove that you're functional, you disprove that you need the surgery. And if you don't prove that you're functional, then you sort of kind of disprove you need the surgery. But I kind of look at it like this. From my perspective, it's we all have a right to make any decision we like in our life, as long as we don't impinge on the rights of other people. For example, I also ride a motorcycle, and that's one thing that, if anything says that you're crazy, that's one thing that says you're crazy, if your objective is to stay alive and not get injured. But you don't need a psychiatric evaluation to get a motorcycle license. You just answer a few questions and, you know, you go out and take out this machine that could kill you in less than a heartbeat. Whereas I don't know of any trans person who's like, just purely because they have competently performed surgery and go through that fine, that it kills them. I've never known that. And the other thing is the post-surgery suicide rate goes down from, like, 30 to 50%. Like, probably one in three people that identify as trans and request surgery will die of their own hand. And I think that's actually conservative. I think the rate's actually probably higher than that, so it's one of the highest suicide rates imaginable. But the post-surgery suicide rate goes down to basically what the general population is.
That was Eternity. You're listening to Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9, and we're going to have to say sayonara.
A very quick goodbye tonight.
Yeah. But thanks to Claire for coming in, and I guess, yeah, just again, do you want to maybe...
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Look, I just wanted to give a little reminder that if you need any help or if you're going through any difficult times at the moment, give some of the services out there a call that can help, one of which is the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Switchboard on 03-9663-2949. Beyond Blue, you can reach beyondblue.org.au is where you'll find them. And phone 1300-224-636 for the Beyond Blue Switchboard.
Beautiful. And just before we go too, we'd like to give a little bit of a plug. DJ Gavin Campbell, he'll be celebrating 30 years on the decks this Saturday night, and he's actually going to be putting on a bit of a party down at 119 Commercial Road in South Yarra. So I do encourage you to get along. I mean, he's actually going to be working from vinyl, he says, so that's cause for celebration alone. So get down there. DJ Gavin Campbell's 30 years on the decks party down at the club that we know is Exchange, or it's now called DNM, but yeah.
And Gavin was the guest in the studio, my very first Lefty Pinkos experience, so that's quite special for me too.
Yeah, fond memories, but stick around, we've got Transmissions coming up next. You've been listening to Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.